members all have this.
Good morning, members.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Daley.
Oh, louder than normal.
Members, you understand I'm going to hear every one of Daley's bills, right? It's not hard. All right, call to order the Senate Jobs and Economic Growth Committee. Members, we have really just one item of business before us today. And so let me make note of, we were also hoping to hear a bill, kind of the first of a package of bills that's part of the governor's jobs package. Senator Scoy, at his request, did not, and I don't know if it was illness or just not, he wasn't ready to go, but he asked us to pull that for today. So that's the jobs tax credit piece, and actually, Senator Metzen, you referred to that yesterday. And so I think even at one point we had, we suggested Senator Metzen present the bill because we'd all like that.
Chairman, I was ready to do it, but we did contact Senator Scoy, and I think he wants to carry it himself. So.
Yeah, and that's...
He would have if I had insisted, but it's his deal, and he got it from the governor, so...
Yeah, and so Senator Metzen asked for your help on this. You know, the clock's ticking, and we have committed to hearing those bills, and whether it's you or Senator Scoy, we're ready to go, and... I think that's important.
Chairman, thank you. And we got a couple more pieces of the governor's bills yesterday, and I referred one to Senator Kielash. So we're gearing up, and we understand the time constraints, so we'll move forward. I'm sure Senator Kielash will be asking for a hearing pretty soon. And there's another one or two that I have, too. So.
And Senator Metzen, one of the points that I was responding to was the governor actually pretty pointedly said we weren't giving him hearings.
Oh.
And so we were set to go today, and now we're asked not to go. So I just want to be clear, we were from the get-go in this committee ready to process those bills. We remain ready to do so. So I'll continue to look to you.
Well, Mr. Chairman, on the one today, I did defer to my good friend, Scoy, and he did want to.
We'll treat him well.
Maybe a little scared. Maybe that's why you get sick. I think I'm coming before you and how tough you are, but I'm sure that's not the case.
Well, and we talked about this yesterday morning at a breakfast with the governor about his jobs package in general and some of the items that we're moving forward and whether there's some bridges that can be built there. And I'll remain optimistic, but we have to actually hear the bills. First, they have to be here. They have to be introduced, and then we'll hear them. So we'll keep trying to do that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, in regards to that, this jobs committee, I think we want to be, in my opinion, is bipartisan and do the right stuff. And these aren't necessarily Republican bills or DFL bills or bills to help the folks. And I know that sounds kind of simple, but I think it's the truth. So,
thank you, Senator Metzen. So members.
We'll see, right?
Members,
I'm more optimistic than I guess.
So old school.
oh, this old school to get a log stuff. I'm sorry. What am I thinking?
Senator Kielash, I would not call Senator Metzen old. I would not. So with that.
Yeah, old. I didn't catch that. Thank
Commissioner
you.
Tingerthal, if you could join us at the table here. Members, we're going to take up. This is,
clear one.
I guess this is the first confirmation within this committee setting. It won't be the last, but we asked Commissioner Tingerthal to join us this morning. I think the number is, members, we have five commissioners that would or could stand confirmation processing by this committee. So I don't know if Commissioner Tingerthal is excited to be the first, and we've assured her that I'm not aware of any reason for her to be anything but optimistic here this morning, and that this is an opportunity for her to share her own background. There's some members of the committee that have worked more with you than others, but then also a little bit more about what your agency is doing, what you started with last year, and the directions you want to go. I'm not sure if there are members in the audience that would also like to testify today, but we'll be open to that, and I expect we'll be able to work pretty quickly, but it is not my goal to do this quickly necessarily, Commissioner Tingerthal. So, welcome to the committee, And the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Senator and members of the committee. I'm really very pleased to be here. I've been on the job at Minnesota Housing for just over a year now, starting February 1st. Some of you may have noted that I am a rerun at Minnesota Housing. I started my career in 1976 at Minnesota Housing when it was just getting started and when I think there were 13 employees. And it was the beginning of what I think has been a pretty extraordinary partnership between a state agency that in many ways is different from a lot of state agencies. In many ways, its statute is designed to really put a construct around it that allows us to raise significant amounts of private investment capital in the private capital markets. So since 1971, when the agency was founded, the agency has really raised and brought to the state well over $1 billion worth of capital. And I think that's a pretty remarkable track record. One of the things that being in the capital markets every year, multiple times, really brings, I think, a discipline to the housing finance agency that I personally enjoy, having been in the private sector for 25 years. We very much need to run the housing finance agency in many ways like a business that is focused on providing affordable housing for a broad range of Minnesotans. Some of the elements of running that agency like a business is that we have multiple accountabilities to the individual investors who buy our bonds, to the independent rating agencies that rate our bonds. Something that's little known is that the agency has a standalone credit rating that's without relying on the state of Minnesota of AA plus AA1. And that's really due to a strong statute and a very, very long track record of fair but conservative management of the resources of the agency, whether those resources be appropriated dollars, bonding authority, or other federal dollars that run through the agency. To that end of operating like a business, we actually adopt a business plan every year. We call it the Affordable Housing Plan. And in that business plan, we actually lay out for all to see, and we do have it as a public hearing item before our board of directors, just how we intend to deploy the resources that the agency has responsibility for over the next year. And we also hold ourselves accountable to that business plan and report back regularly to our board of directors. And last year, for example, even though we were still coming out of a deep economic recession, which all of you know hit housing harder than just about any other sector, we achieved 96% of the goals that we set for us in terms of the number of dollars that are put out to borrowers, the number of borrowers that are served, the number of developments that have been developed. And I'll get into that in just a little more detail in a minute. We also, I think, have a very skilled and diverse board that includes small business people, people who have experience in the public sector, bankers, et cetera. And that board takes very seriously its fiduciary responsibility to provide oversight to the agency, and it's something that we certainly talk about when we meet with the rating agencies. And finally, I think we're very fortunate to have a team of really skilled professionals at Minnesota Housing. It's not always easy to recruit and retain professionals within the state employment system. But we have, for example, a chief financial officer who served for many years as an investment banker and as a financial advisor to the state and to communities. And he brings just a tremendous amount of expertise. One of the other things I want to talk about is, to me, one of the core strengths of Minnesota Housing is that we do virtually nothing of the activities we do on our own. It really is built on a 40-year network of partnerships. For example, in our multifamily area, all of the projects that we finance are really owned either by private parties, developers, owner managers, small business people who operate within the state of Minnesota, who employ hundreds of employees that develop and manage good, solid rental housing throughout the state. We're very blessed to have largely a group of very responsible owners who really take care of their properties and really want those properties to be good places for people to live. We also team up with local governments. We work with public housing authorities, redevelopment authorities, and really count on them in many areas to deliver the programs, particularly with appropriated dollars that come through our agency. Also, in our single-family area, we don't do any of our single-family mortgage lending directly. We do it all through existing mortgage lenders, ranging from the very largest. We've had a long-term relationship with Wells Fargo and U.S. Bank, for example, to some smaller and more specialty mortgage banking operations. And what we do is make the funds available, and they're able to then lend to first-time home buyers who really, at a time like this, are at the core of being able to restart the housing engine. If you don't have first-time home buyers buying houses, you can't have those move-up buyers who would like to sell their house, move up to a little bigger house. You just don't have that engine going on.
Commissioner, Senator Peterson has a question here.
Thank you, Senator Michelle. Peterson. Commissioner, to that point, just this week, I think might have been yesterday, the day before, I just got a letter from a constituent who's a real estate attorney, basically, and had some concerns about this $25 billion settlement that is coming back to many states and the federal government from these mortgage companies who have apparently admitted they had lending practices that were not fair to their customers. Have you been following that at all, or do you feel like you can answer a question related to that? Or
I have been following it. I can attempt to answer a question, although I will say that the negotiations have been entirely through the Attorney General's office, and a lot of the deployment of capital will be monitored by the Commerce Department. Frankly, over the last year and a half, as the negotiations have gone on, many of the attorney generals around the country have been quite circumspect as to whether they intended for their state to participate or not, and really kind of across the board. Some felt it was leaning towards being too generous to the banks. Others felt it was leaning towards being too generous to the homeowners. So it's not been a clear-cut kind of case, but I have been following it.
Senator Peterson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Commissioner, I think that was a concern of my constituent, and I think I'd have the same concern, is that somehow we get those dollars back to the people that were taken advantage of rather than those dollars going back to, I think his fear is, the banks to restart this market, so to speak. Do you have an opinion on that, and would your agency advocate one way or another to get those dollars back to those individuals that took out the loans originally?
Senator Peterson, I ardently believe that those dollars should and must go back to the borrowers. And as I understand the settlement, There is a piece that will be managed with oversight from the Commerce Department, which will be available to those homeowners who did go through foreclosure, who felt that they were wronged, who you might think of if there had been a class action suit, they might have been the people that had taken part in that class action suit. And as I understand it, there will be an open application process for anyone who feels that they were wronged by the process, that they were treated badly, robo-signing, those sorts of things, and they will have an opportunity to apply for and receive up to $2,000 apiece. Frankly, it's not a lot of restitution, but it's at least something to help people get their lives started in a different home. The other piece I think is still under planning, and that is the piece which will allow banks to be able to do principal pay downs on some of the mortgages. It's a little, the rules of the road for that, quite frankly, at this point in time, are a little bit less clear as to how those borrowers will be selected for principal pay downs. But it would be my understanding that the Commerce Department, again, would oversee, since they do oversee the banks, how those dollars would actually be distributed. But it's my understanding that except for a very small portion of the dollars that will go for enforcement activities through the Commerce Department, that the vast majority of the dollars will go to homeowners.
Thank you.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What advice did you give the Minnesota Attorney General on in relations to this settlement?
Senator Howe, I did not converse directly with the Attorney General's office on this matter.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you explain to me why you weren't involved? I'm just following it, too. My significant other is in a mortgage, but I'm just wondering, the principal pay down doesn't look like it's going to help very many people. It's got to be like 140%. They've got to be over 5.5%. But I'm just wondering what expertise our Minnesota Attorney General relied on if they didn't rely on your office, or maybe a better question would be, why did you not interject your agency into being involved in that and giving some advice or some guidance?
Commissioner.
Senator Howe, I would say that we certainly made ourselves available and our expertise to the Attorney General's office. We do have two attorneys general that serve on our who work on Minnesota housing activities. But I will say that the overall direction of the lawsuit was very heavily driven by particularly Secretary Donovan, and that many of the individual sort of techniques were really kind of brought together into a single settlement, which is pretty tough when you have 50 attorneys general negotiating all with different interests in their states. So I certainly followed at the national level, and I have to say that I agreed with the idea that the bulk of the resources really should go to the homeowners. I will say, in addition, and I think this has gotten a little bit lost in the press, that in addition to the principal paydowns that are allowed by this settlement, that we have also been staying very close to the announced Home Affordable Refinance Program, or HARP program, which was modified and allows for modification of loans that happen to be owned by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to reduce interest rates. And there's even a mechanism for paying down principal rather than reducing your payment. for those loans that are owned by Fannie and Freddie, and without regard to how much those loans are underwater. And that's now being rolled out by lenders in the state. I know that Wells Fargo, for example, just began taking applications for HARP 2.0, as it's referred to, and that others are falling into line pretty quickly here.
Just a quick follow-up, Mr. Chair. So I guess to characterize your testimony is that you were available, but maybe your resources weren't needed at the Attorney General office.
Right? I would agree with that characterization.
I'm just, Mr. Chair, in the future, where do you see yourself as leading that agency where another situation might arise where your expertise is needed, it's available, but it's not being heeded, or you're not being able to? How are you going to address that issue? How are you going to interject yourself into the conversation? What would you do?
Commissioner.
Senator Howe, I would like very much to work closely with the Attorney General and particularly with the Commissioner of Commerce. And I think that now that the settlement has been announced, it might be a good time for the three of us to have that discussion about how we might work together, not only on the implementation, but also on any future case that might arise.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I understand that the Federal Housing Administration's prediction of running out of funds at some point this year, and I'm wondering if you could describe for us what type of contingency planning that you're doing here in Minnesota if that were the case.
Senator Nelson, I'm not aware of any predictions that FHA will be shut down in any way. I know that there have been numerous hearings about and concerns about the size and appropriateness of the FHA insurance fund, but it's really not a program. Unlike, for example, the Small Business Administration that has a cap on how much guarantee authority can be offered. A similar cap does not exist for FHA, and so I really don't anticipate that being a problem this year.
Okay, Commissioner, please continue. We'll interject once in a while here.
Not a problem. What I'd like to do now is talk just a little bit and give you just a snapshot of what 1 year at Minnesota Housing looks like in terms of accomplishment. And this is numbers that we reported to on our board for the year ending September 30th of 2011. During that year, 2,245 families became homeowners for the first time. And our average family size of 2.1 people, that means that almost 5,000 Minnesotans had a homeownership roof over their heads as homeowners for the first time. I'd also like to say that we work very closely with a number of other organizations to make sure that families of color have access to our programs. And almost a quarter of those families that I reported on are families of color, and that's more than double the rate in the regular mortgage market. And I know that there's been a lot of discussion about the equity gap between households of color and white households, and we reach out to realtors and to lenders with our mortgage products and make sure that they are focusing on marketing in those communities. On the multifamily side of the agency, in that year, we closed 101 loans on multifamily rental properties. That created 4,300 units of multifamily rental housing, and we believe it also created about 4,200 construction jobs at the same time. We also work towards our goal, which was established in the Pawlenty administration, of building 4,000 units of permanent supportive housing. This is housing for families that have experienced long-term homelessness and need some level of services in order to get back into the mainstream of society. We have made remarkable progress towards that goal and now stand at about 3,600 units. And one of our proposals this year in the capital investment bill would provide some financing to try to reach that 4,000 unit goal. One of the other activities that we do is we have responsibility under a contract with the Department of Housing and Urban Development to manage the oversight for more than 30,000 units of federally subsidized housing that's located all over the state of Minnesota. This is something that many other housing finance agencies do. And last year, in an effort to make sure that they were being cost conscious, Housing and Urban Development put those contracts out for competitive bid. And I'm very pleased to say that Minnesota Housing won that competitive bid and has been awarded that contract for oversight for the next 2 years. And one of the things that that means is that we really get to have firsthand look at all of the units of affordable rental housing in the state of Minnesota, whether we've been involved with the financing on them or not. And we think that's a very good thing because it gives us more of a comprehensive look at what needs to be done in the future. In addition, we're responsible for channeling federal and state dollars that are used for housing counseling. In the last few years, most of that counseling has been, unfortunately, foreclosure prevention counseling. And last year, through the Homeownership Center, which is our conduit for counseling dollars, more than 10,000 families in Minnesota received counseling. And I'm even more pleased to say that 60% of those families avoided foreclosure on their homes. I think that's a pretty remarkable track record. One of the other things that's built into Minnesota Housing is fairly unique among my colleagues around the country, and that is years ago, our board adopted a procedure where any earnings of Minnesota Housing that are not needed to meet our reserve requirements with the rating agencies are automatically plowed back into programs. And after a couple of tough years where we were suffering loan losses, much like the rest of the mortgage banking industry, last year we were able to turn $14 million in what we call our pool $3, dollars that were in excess of what we needed for our reserves, back into programs. And I think it's a great thing that that's an automatic, that that's something that has been adopted, that we have in our documents with rating agencies, et cetera. So we bring dollars back to the table, and I think we also have a pretty remarkable track record of taking the dollars that are appropriated and leveraging them many times over. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I've concluded my remarks. I'm happy to take any questions about my background or about activities at the agency.
Commissioner, do you have some staff, some senior staff that you want to introduce? Take this opportunity to point out some faces in the room. That might be one thing you want to do this morning with us.
Certainly. We have our two legislative liaisons here. They're sitting over here on the left. Tanya Orr is our Assistant Commissioner for Policy, and Tanya has been with the Housing Finance Agency for 16 years and has helped legislators over the years really craft some of the very most innovative programs that Minnesota Housing is known for nationally. And sitting next to Tanya is Jeanette Blankenship, who is our legislative liaison here, and who I will say went through the discrete planning of having completed the legislative session last year, had her first child, and came back just in time to start the session this year. I think that's awfully commendable.
Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I think Ms. Tingerthal does a great job, and I'm happy to be able to confirm her today. But I was just out in the hallway talking to a veteran from my district, and one of the things he brought up was housing for veterans that come back from the wars. And yesterday we did a little bill that was trying to find jobs for veterans. And how extensively do you get involved with our veteran community as far as trying to find housing for people who need housing when they come back from combat?
Commissioner.
Senator Tomasoni, the agency has worked very closely with MACV and other organizations, particularly around the very, very tough issue of providing housing for veterans that have been formerly homeless. And it's a terrible plight for veterans that, because of issues of mental illness, inability to get employment when they return, that there have been homeless vets, and have worked over the years using some of bonding dollars from previous years for the construction of housing, both on the campus of the Veterans Hospital in Minneapolis and also on the campus of the Veterans Hospital in St. Cloud. We also have, whenever asked, supported more allocation of so-called VASH vouchers for rental assistance into the state of Minnesota, and we've been working with MACV quite successful in that. And I'm very pleased to say that as one of the considerations in the bonding bill that will be introduced or has been introduced now and will be heard by the Capital Investment Committee, that one of the eligible activities would be for various kinds of permanent supportive housing, and that there are, in fact, two projects that could be eligible for that funding that have already been announced by the Veterans Administration as having been selected for sites that the Veterans Administration will provide free of charge to the developers of that housing. One will be in St. Cloud, adjacent to the project that's already there, another 32 units of permanent supportive housing, and also at Fort Snelling, another 58 units of permanent supportive housing in a renovated building. And we're very hopeful that we'll be able to attract additional VASH vouchers. We think we have a leg up on that. We've had Commissioner Shelato out to see some of the developments that have been done in the past. You can ask him, but I think he was very impressed with the track record and the cooperative relationship that we have with the developer that has been selected by the Federal Veterans Administration to develop these two projects.
Thank you.
Commissioner, if I could take you to maybe 20,000 feet here, just based on your resume and your background, and not just with housing finance, but going back over a couple decades in this kind of financial housing, lending, mortgage world, I wonder if we could tap into that expertise. You know, a lot of people would look at this most recent economic crash and point to the housing industry, the housing sector, as the start of it, the biggest part of it. I don't know if anyone in your circles, you know, what have we learned? Looking back now over the last 4 or 5 years, where did government at any levels go wrong? What could we do better? Just kind of a lessons learned from your standpoint.
It's a very large question,
I know,
Senator.
I apologize.
I'll answer first what I think we've learned, and that is that no matter what the circumstances, lenders shouldn't lend more money to people than they can afford to repay. And as you indicated, I worked in the private mortgage banking business. I actually worked for a Minnesota company known as GMAC Residential Funding, which was a real pioneer in the mortgage banking industry. It was one of the first to put together packages of loans that were larger than were allowed to be packaged by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and was in fact a pioneer in putting together private mortgage-backed securities. And when I worked there, it was a very, very conservative business. And, we lent with 20% down, and the securities that were structured were very, very, very simple. And I left there in the mid-90s and moved on to multifamily finance during that time. And quite honestly, I came back to the Twin Cities in the early 2000s, and I looked at the mortgage banking activity that was going on, and personally, I couldn't understand it. I couldn't understand why investors were buying packages of subprime mortgages the way that they were structured. It just made no sense to me, because I had been on the other side of the table as we described pools of loans, and as we went through what at that time in the 90s was a very rigorous process of disclosure about loans, what was in the package, how had they been underwritten. And I still scratch my head a little bit as to who in the chain stopped looking, who stopped doing the due diligence. Was it the rating agencies? Was it the investors? Was it the investment bankers? But what I can say to you is that we went very, very seriously wrong. Quite frankly, most of those securities that went very badly wrong were packaged by private investment banking firms. And unfortunately, in my opinion, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac invested in those securities that were packaged by private investment banking firms. So I'm hoping that we're back to a sensible world where we do credit underwriting, where we make sure that borrowers are able to afford the housing that they're about to buy. We never diverted from that at the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. I wasn't there, but our track record is that we never made adjustable rate loans. We make 30-year fixed rate loans, and our foreclosure rate is about half of the MBA rate for the state of Minnesota. And those borrowers that have run into trouble with their mortgages, we adopted very early on an aggressive modification program so that everyone that could stay in their homes, we were able to rewrite their mortgages, drop their interest rate, maybe extend the payments that they had missed over a time when they could regain their footing and get a job. So it's not that we were not impacted by the recession, but we were able, because we had done good underwriting initially, to really work with many of those borrowers and make sure that they could stay in their homes.
And then, Commissioner, just one follow-up, and then I know I have a number of members who want to talk to this. I'm going to say we, but it's going to be government at all levels. Somewhere in the previous decade, we really identified home ownership as a goal, as something to push and prod people toward. And someone could argue, and maybe you're starting to make that argument, that then led to diminished lending criteria and examination of credit and background, and kind of spiraled. So I'm back now to, is home ownership at some level an important government goal, something that we should be a part of and push toward, or have we kind of hit the outer margin of where that's healthy for an economy and for individual families. I know this is a giant question for you, but
Mr. Chair, I believe that a good home is a foundation for a good life. I really believe that firmly, and that good home has to be affordable in order for it to be a foundation. So it's not draining off an undue amount of a family's income in order to just keep a roof over their head. I think that given that we have a range of incomes in this country, that what that means is that there will always be a need for both homeownership and good, well-run, well-managed rental housing. And, I think that as a country, we have tended to lean in the direction of homeownership because it brings a lot of good things with it. It brings a commitment to neighborhoods and communities. It brings stability in many cases into people sort of setting down roots and getting linked into schools and that sort of thing. But the equation of what makes sense in terms of what kind of housing choice you make, frankly, changes from time to time. Right now, home prices and mortgage prices are at some of their lowest ever in history. And so it's actually today, if I'm a young person and I have a job and I have a regular source of income and I have good credit, it probably makes more sense for me to buy a house today than to rent, because frankly, rental properties are pretty tight right now and rents are going up. But that equation could flip over in a very short period of time. So I don't think there's any magic answer as to, well, the right amount of home ownership is 75%, or the right amount is 70%, or the right amount is 80%. I think what we need to focus on is an affordable housing payment, whether that be rental or ownership, so that families can get a good start in life.
Senator Kreif.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Tinkerthal, for being here today and allowing us to ask you some questions. I have two questions. Number one, I grew up on the farm, and I'm gonna give you something of a little bit of a parallel. Growing up on a farm, I learned something about animal husbandry and caring for animals. And as I've grown, I have seen people and know people that do a very good job of taking care of their animals, their pets, because they understand it. There's also some people that shouldn't own a pet. Okay? We all know somebody that shouldn't own a pet. I'm going to give something of a parallel to home ownership, and I want your opinion on this. There's also people that own homes that neglect them terribly and don't take care of them. And what I'm asking you is, what are you doing as you're trying to help people with home ownership? What are you doing to help these people to do a better job of caring for their homes and learning about home ownership? And there's some maintenance things that when they're done on a timely manner, they don't grow into a bigger problem and get somebody totally underwater in a bad way. What are you doing?
Senator, there are several things that the agency has been committed to for a very long time that address your concern. For all of our agency financing programs, we require a curriculum of first-time home buyer counseling, and it really runs the gamut, and we do this through the Minnesota Homeownership Center, which is, quite frankly, the only organization of its type in the country where there is a statewide network of counseling organizations that work through the homeownership center. Homeownership center can do the job of developing the curriculum, which is then delivered by those counseling organizations. And it really goes through all the basics. It goes through basic budgeting. So, you know, before you even get to should I buy a house or not, it really talks about the basics of budgeting and what you're going to need to allow for in your home budget and how much of that it might be wise to allocate to housing. It also teaches people about the long-term costs of housing, property taxes, maintenance, how much of a reserve you should have set aside. It also teaches people how to work with real estate professionals who, unfortunately, are not always perhaps as 100% honest as we would like them to be, and teaches them how to ask questions of the real estate professionals that they're working with, how to understand the loan documents that they'll be asked to sign. So with regard to the dollars that we are responsible for administering, that is something that we insist on. There are also a couple of other things that we do with particular programs that focus on a slightly lower income of home buyers, and those are Habitat for Humanity and several of the community land trusts around the state. And in those cases, the education goes even deeper, and there is a bit of a what I would call a safety net in terms of a phone number to call when you're going through that first year of budgeting and maintenance. And many of those courses also include just basic, very basic home maintenance items like, so how is it that you go about fixing a leaking toilet? So it's not perfect, but for the programs that we allocate dollars to on behalf of the state, we do have a very strong commitment to homebuyer education.
Senator DeCryf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a second question, and I held off a little while because I wanted to actually get the email from my L.A. who brought it by. I'm looking for some advice from you on how to answer a constituent. I got an email from a constituent who is telling me that he would like to be involved in the Fannie and Freddie program to help refinance his loan. But he has his loan with another lender, and because of the fact that he has good credit, better credit, he's never been late on a payment, but because of the situation with the lowering home values, he's $25,000 underwater. And he would like to find a way to be able to to redo his loan. But the lender just looks at him and says, we don't want to mess with yours. We're making money off of your loan. What would you advise me? How would you answer this constituent on what he should do to try to get a better interest rate?
Senator, I really, truly do wish that I had an answer for you. We are doing what we can to promote the knowledge of people for the HARP program, where if your loan is owned by Fannie or Freddie, that it can be modified. There has been legislation introduced nationally to allow the refinance of FHA mortgages in such a way, but it cannot be done without congressional action that is in front of Congress and could help the many thousands of people in Minnesota who have FHA loans. With regard to private mortgage loans that are in private mortgage securities, it really is a matter for the investors in those securities, and they have there really is no legislative or regulatory oversight for private mortgage-backed securities. So I think there is not a government answer to that question.
Okay, I've got Senator Lilly and then Senator Torres-Wright. Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, again, thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate this opportunity to have a conversation with you.
It's come to my attention that the Met Council has targets for housing, for affordable housing within a number of communities. And one question is, are you engaged in that process of setting those? But beyond that, you mentioned that you have a business plan. Could you tell us a little bit about what are the dynamics? What are the numbers? What is the geographic targets, demographic targets? Who are the people that we are serving? Where are they? What are the different categories that you are using? And how have those numbers been adjusted based on what has happened in the economy? Have there been adjustments? Have there been changes based on our current situation? The challenge with the Met Council is that they've set affordable housing targets that can't be achieved. In the city of Woodbury, if they literally stopped all building except for the affordable housing, they still couldn't meet the targets that the Met Council has put forward. So are you faced with the same scenario in your agency?
Senator, in answer to your first question, although we have a very open dialogue and relationship with the Met Council, we oftentimes share things like data research so that we're being efficient about getting that research and sharing the results. We are not directly involved in setting the affordable housing goals. That is done directly by the council. In answer to your question about our affordable housing plan, this year's plan, which kicked in on October 1st, we are allocating about $658 million worth of resources. Now, two of the biggest chunks, one is on the multifamily side, one's on the single family side, and they're both in about the $200 million range. About $250 million of that $650 will go to the first-time homebuyer mortgages that I mentioned. Linked to that are, and those are through the sale of tax-exempt bonds. Linked to that are some state-appropriated dollars that came through this committee last year, and also some federal dollars that provide down payment and closing cost assistance for those first-time home buyers based on a set of rules that we have adopted. On the other side of the ledger are payments that we receive, housing assistance payments, through the Department of Housing and Urban Development. And those go into rental assistance payments for existing federally subsidized housing. So those are the sort of the two largest of the programs. In addition to that, we utilize a combination of state and federal resources, the most important of which is the federal low-income housing tax credit, which allows us to fund usually about 25 projects in the course of the year for either new rental housing or housing that is being preserved, federally assisted housing that's being preserved in capital investments. And we also run a fairly large home improvement program. So we have programs for people who already own their house and need a little help with keeping the maintenance up on those houses. In terms of geographic, our allocation is about 55% of the funds to the Twin Cities metropolitan area and 45% of the funds in greater Minnesota. And that's been a very consistent track record over the long history of Minnesota housing. In terms of the range of incomes, and honestly, I'd be more than happy to provide to members of the committee a copy of our affordable housing plan. It's pretty readable, and it really goes into a lot of detail. But we show a range of programs there of incomes that we assist, and it ranges from a low of about $7,000, and that would be for the rental assistance program called Bridges that comes out of state appropriated dollars and provides rental assistance for people who have suffered mental illness. And at the higher end of the spectrum, actually the highest kind of average income is for our home improvement programs, which you might expect because those are folks who already own a home. And those are up in the around a $60,000 range for a family of four. So there's a whole spectrum of programs in between, with our rental programs typically serving the lower income categories and our homeownership programs kind of overlapping in the middle and serving a somewhat higher income group.
Thank you.
Is that
yes.
responsive?
Thank you.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It just seems appropriate to me now that we move this confirmation. We're getting into a job description and responsibilities that she's not been appointed to do. And I appreciate that because there's a lot of expertise in this committee. But it just seems appropriate to me that if we want to have more kind of conversation about, you know, some of the duties of the department, that we do have a hearing on that. But this hearing is about submitting a recommendation for a confirmation and just hearing about your expertise, Ms. Tingerthal. I am absolutely confident that we will be in good hands. And so I would like to move that we recommend Mrs. Mary Tingerthal for appointment for confirmation as the Commissioner of Housing and Finance Agency.
All right. So Senator Metzen had been excited to make that motion, Senators, right? But we'll have that. But he,
Mr. Chairman, I lobbied to make that motion, but I'll.
Senators Ray is quick.
She is quick. That's fine.
I have at least two, now three other members that will also allow some questioning and conversation. But we do have a quorum, and we have we have a motion on the table. Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think, Commissioner, I think it's certainly appropriate to find out what your personal opinions or your personal thoughts are or concerns on some loan types. And I'd just like you to briefly maybe give a sentence or two about each. First, reverse, then fixed, then arms, and then option arms. If you could just give me a short what your personal beliefs are of those products.
She mentioned arms before.
She doesn't have a job yet.
Commissioner Tingerthal.
Senator Howe, first of all, I'm a big believer in the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. It's what I have for myself and what I have counseled many people to try to work towards. It gives you stability. It gives you predictability. It gives you the ability to budget. And it sometimes they've been very expensive. My first house, my interest rate was 11.75%. And, you know, I'm kind of stunned by that today. But I do think that particularly for low and moderate income families, that the fixed rate is the way to go because it gives you that predictability. I do think that there are times when an adjustable rate mortgage or an ARM can be appropriate for people in times when short-term interest rates are very low and long-term interest rates are very high. If someone is planning to only own a home for a couple of years, I think an adjustable rate mortgage can be a good choice. But I think there are many varieties of ARMs. There are some that are quite conservative, that have caps, so that there's not quite the predictability of a fixed-rate mortgage, but at least you know you can never go higher than a particular level and have very modest adjustments so that there isn't a lot of payment shock. There are also a lot of ARM loans that did not include those fail-safe measures and basically had very, very high caps, very, very big steps in adjustment, and really caused a great deal of pain for a number of borrowers. option arms, this is my personal opinion, are perhaps one of the most egregious developments of the mortgage banking industry of my career. They basically are a loan where the borrower could decide on a monthly basis whether they were going to make their payment or not. And if they didn't make their payment, the amount of the interest that they didn't pay that much actually added on to the principal of the loan. I mean, I honestly have a very hard time understanding why it is that regulators were unable to put a stop to that very toxic mortgage product. Thankfully, the incidence of option arms was relatively lower here than in some other states like California. So I have very little tolerance for option arms. Reverse mortgages are a very tricky area. I think that a reverse mortgage is a financing vehicle that allows primarily elderly homeowners who have paid off their mortgages to essentially borrow against their value in their home in order to create an annuity for them to live off of. And they become relatively less common under regulation from FHA, and there is very stringent counseling that's required for reverse mortgages. I guess my personal opinion would be that there can be situations in which a reverse mortgage can provide a very modest amount of revenue for an elderly homeowner, but that they should be approached only with extensive counseling from professionals that are not selling the product, but separate housing counselors, and only with the greatest amount of conservative caution.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate, and I really appreciate you answering those. I thought you did a great job answering those questions, and I appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to renew my motion. I have a motion before the committee.
Senator Torres-Ray. I want you to think about this. We can push motions, and I don't know if you're in a hurry. What I'm trying to do from this end of the table is acknowledge every member that wants to talk or ask a question. And I have two more. I have Senator Nelson, and I have Senator Miller. I don't expect it's going to be long, and I don't expect at all that it's going to be rough. So I would much rather run this committee erring on the side of acknowledging every member. And I think if you look back over the last year plus, that's how I've done this. With your patience and your help, I can continue to do it that way. But it just strikes me we don't need to stand on the legal or the procedural rules that govern these committees and have the result of cutting people off. Yesterday we went till 12:15 or 12:20 because there were a lot of questions. We had three bills in front of us. So I'd ask you to consider that. And if you'd withdraw your motion for at least letting these two members finish whatever topic they were going to bring up that is relevant to this confirmation, then I think we can proceed.
Mr. Chairman, I absolutely I am enjoying this conversation and taking notes because I do like the information. What is problematic for me is to listen to your questioning around practices that are right now very important to the public. And I will venture to say that it will be very appropriate for us to have a hearing on these questions because all of these issues around housing, you know, what is happening with, you know, the administration, what some of the programs that the Metropolitan Council has in place, and some of the connections that these different organizations and different decisions have with this state organization are so important. And I would love to have a hearing and really figure out, you know, how are we going to work in the future to make these things work? You know, how do we work with the Attorney General's office, for instance? I think that that's, you know, I think Senator Howell has a very good point about that. I think my motion is more, you know, do we have to have these conversations about all of these practices during a confirmation? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't mind the questioning, you know, really about, you know, the commissioner's background. You know, I'm definitely learning a lot and just being incredibly impressed with their answers. But seriously, we can go on asking questions about housing and what's going on right now with the mortgage industry and the banking industry for days. So, Mr. Chairman, I will be happy to take my motion, defer my motion, and continue with the questioning. I just wanted to express concern about kind of the line of questioning that we're doing right now when, in fact, we just need to do a confirmation. But I will be happy to allow you to continue.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you. I know that we've visited in my office, and there's a couple other questions that I would like you to address. One kind of ties back to Senator Lilly's question, and you were discussing the many different programs and ways that we serve those who need housing assistance. And it reminds me of, I think, the conversation we had in my office, which is, in a sense, you know, how many programs are there? And not that the number is so important, but what I am wondering about is, you know, people who need assistance, I wonder how are they going to know which of the myriad of programs we have to apply to? Is there sort of like a one-stop number where if you need some housing assistance, you don't have to figure out which of these myriad of programs to apply to? So I'm interested in the accessibility piece to make sure that folks who need assistance have access to it in an easy way. And then the second one is a little bit of a more narrow question, and it has to do with the home improvement program. And I actually have a constituent who has in some ways benefited from this program, but also has some great concerns as far as, you know, how, and maybe you can just elaborate, not on this specific case, but, you know, how do we make sure that we get the best value of, and then how do we know that the quality is there? So this constituent has had concerns about both. So if you could kind of address the overall issue about how we best serve people through this myriad of programs, and have we thought about streamlining or one-stop shop or something, and then maybe delve into that best home improvement program. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Tingerthal.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. I'll answer your question about access to information in a couple of ways. One is we sort of recognize that it's not always a state agency where citizens will look for help. And so we have tried both on the single-family side, the homeownership side, and the rental side to work with organizations that are maybe more recognized in the marketplace as a source of information. So our single-family programs, the one-stop shop that we send people to for information is the Homeownership Center, and they have a very robust website, and we work with them on our homeownership programs there. On the rental side, it usually is an individual looking for a particular type of apartment, and oftentimes our assistance is very much behind the scenes. So if you're looking for an apartment that happens to have a lower rent to it, you probably wouldn't come looking for a state agency. You would, you know, look for an apartment building. And there we work through an organization called Housing Link, which, again, is an online service that helps to link renters, low-income renters particularly, with housing opportunities in the geographic area where they are looking. So we try to use private sector methods to get the word out to those targeted home buyers. That said, most of our programs are offered, again, not through the agency directly, but through private parties. And so we work with our lenders, for example, on cooperative advertising materials that they use to publicize our programs. And our rental properties are generally managed by well-known rental property management companies that do their own advertising. So we're very much a behind-the-scenes kind of resource that utilizes the private sector to promote the availability of the opportunities.
And then right. Just to follow up on the home improvement program.
Yes. Again, there are two main pieces to our home improvement programs. One is an amortizing loan that is originated either through banks or a couple of nonprofit lenders. And in that case, it is very much like going to a bank and taking out a fixed home equity loan. And so it's very much driven by the borrower in terms of their selecting the contractor that they wish to deal with and really taking the normal precautions that they would in doing any kind of home improvement project. So it's a pretty much hands-off private sector approach to lending in our home improvement loan program. We have another program that's administered through housing authorities and a number of nonprofits around the state, which is available primarily for emergency-type repairs for very low-income homeowners. And that is, in those cases, the administrators, as we call them, assist the homeowner in getting competitive bids and in overseeing the rehabilitation work that's done.
Just one indulgence, just because I have a so there are no referred contractors? In other words, a person who partakes in this program can choose any contractor they want?
That is correct. For the home improvement loan program, that's...
How about for the second piece that you discussed?
For the second piece, generally, the administrator will assist the homeowner in getting competitive bids from local area contractors.
Any local contractor?
There are usually requirements for private bonding, et cetera, the typical kinds of things that you would look for in a responsible contractor.
Bonded and insured.
Thank you.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I actually just had a comment on Senator Torres-Ray's motion, and I just wanted to speak in support of her motion. I had the opportunity to work with the commissioner and her staff through the budget process last year, and just really appreciated that opportunity, and thank you for the work you do and your staff does, and we certainly look forward to continuing to work together with you and your staff. And it's a good thing when you have several people wanting to make an emotion to confirm you, so congratulations.
Thank you.
Very good, members. So Senator Torres-Ray, seconded loudly by Senator Miller, recommends that the Committee on Jobs and Economic Growth recommend the appointment of Mary Tingerthal as Commissioner of Housing Finance Agency be confirmed by the Senate. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion is approved. Commissioner,
congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Members, committee is adjourned.
You didn't have time for scoring anyway, did he? Might have figured it out.